This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, we feature two riders who have been showing form at the early start of the winter season. Kylie Dermody from Area 1 recently returned from spending time in Ireland and has been showing a number of horses while she's based in Florida for the winter. We'll hear from Kylie in just a moment, but first, we hear from Lisa Borgia, an adult amateur from Area 4, who spends her winters with Becky Holder in North Carolina and has already won at Full Gallop and Pine Top this season. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you've had a wonderful start to the season, haven't you, with Frodo of the Shire. I'm sure you don't call him that in the barn.
No, his barn name is Fred, and he's been eventing now for, I'm going to say, 6 years. And he was actually a rescue horse. He was seized as humane case, and I adopted him from a rescue.
Well, also, you have other horses, too. We want to talk about all of them. Laurelin is the other horse that you've won already, and you've been based now in North Carolina for the winter season. How is that working for you? How many horses do you have? And tell us a little bit about the setup you have there.
Sure. I have part of a training facility that I share with Becky Holder. And right now I have three horses of my own. And then Becky and I have a joint ownership of a syndication of a young horse that she's bringing up named Telperion. Laurelin is actually Telperion's brother from the same breeder. And so it's been fun working with those two horses. They're very similar. And he won the beginner novice at Full Gallop, yes, just about a month ago. And that was his first outing of the year. So I was very happy with that.
Well, tell us about those outings that you've had so far, because two wins that you're showing already for 2015. How did the season start for you then? Did you go into the start of the season with these horses knowing that they were on good form, even better than last year?
Actually, Fred can be a little bit rusty out of the start, and he had a bit of a rusty start at Full Gallop. We went prelim there, but I was just doing it as a training round and then geared him up for Pine Top a few weeks ago in the intermediate, and he answered me quite nicely. He does stay in shape fairly easily, and I, you know, had that schedule in mind as I was bringing him along. And then next week, on Friday of this week, actually, we're going to do the two-star at Pine Top. So we're just keeping that going on and on, hopefully for until probably the fork. It will probably be the last two-star he does here in the South.
So how did you get into the sport, Lisa? Have you been mm-hmm. eventing all your life?
Well, I started riding when I was 5 or 6. My grandfather bought me a pony. We definitely did not do eventing back then. But after I went to a school called Meredith Manor, if anyone remembers a place like that in West Virginia, that was horse school when I was in my late teens, early 20s. And then I started eventing after that. Back in the days of penalty boxes and a very different looking sport, the long format and all that, back in the day.
So you did the long haul then of all that fitness work?
Yes, yeah. And then I took a little break when I went back to school and got my PhD. So there was about 10 years there that I didn't have horses at all. And then I started up again in about 2002. I got another horse and started eventing again. So it's been a while and it's been great. I've enjoyed it tremendously.
So what would you say would have been the highlights, the high points of your eventing career so far, Lisa?
Well, actually, the stuff I've been doing with Fred in the last few years has been phenomenal. I've had a couple of really nice outings at Richland. I almost completed the two-star there last year at Richland, and unfortunately I had a pilot error and jumped one of the three-star fences just before the finish. But I was really proud of him at that outing. He's been a very good horse for me to learn on. He's got the heart of a lion. Not very talented as far as gates go, but he's just so much fun to ride.
So as you've obviously been doing this a long time, what do you find now are the aspects of the sport that you enjoy more maybe than you did, say, 20 years ago?
Well, now there is a lot more emphasis on the care of the horse and the conditioning and the nutrition. And there's a lot more information there than we had 20 or 30 years ago. And so that's been very interesting to incorporate into the sport. And then there are more riders and more coaches now that have a true understanding of the sport than there used to be. Before, eventing was, back in the day, kind of a collection of horses that were neither good dressage horses or good stadium horses, and so they were kind of placed as eventers. And now there's a real specialty in eventing, and the horses are phenomenal, and the courses are much nicer than they used to be.
Well, talk about those changes, because obviously you've seen the sport evolve over time, Lisa, and as an amateur who obviously not relying on your livelihood in the sport, but training with a lot of very well-known names, what have you watched that has evolved and that you've enjoyed about the evolution of the sport?
Well, the emphasis on young rider development has been really good for the sport, I think. There's a lot of talented upper-level riders that are taking time out of their schedules to conduct clinics and stuff specifically focused at bringing up some talented young riders, which I think is a really good investment into the sport. Trying to get those basics down when the riders are young is very helpful. The other things that I've seen in the sport too is there's more of a safety conscious thing going on now. Some of it's been forced on the sport, but some of it has actually been grown within the sport on its own. And I think that that is really important too, that you can always ride another day. If you get knocked off your horse, you just have to dust yourself off and walk back to the barn and make your plans for the next time out and not think that it's worth getting back on and running the risk of hurting yourself or your horse. And I think people are really seriously considering that now, where it used to be not so much. I remember when you could, you'd fall off and you'd get back on and continue on and take your lumps. And now I think that it's different, and I think it's very good for the sport.
Yes, because years ago, of course, we didn't have helmets and back protectors and air vests and so on. And, we would roll and bounce and jump back on again. It's a very different culture today, isn't it? But do you think that's for the better, especially as you get older?
I do. I think that it is for the better. And it's not, it is especially for us older riders. When you're near 60, you tend to break instead of bounce. So I think that that's good, but I think it's also good to protect our young riders too. If you look at sports that are in organized school sports, football or whatever, or for women, that the sports that they have too, they're very strict about if you get knocked around, that you come out of the game and you get evaluated. And I think that we should do the same thing in our sport. And I think that is actually happening, and I appreciate that.
Well, as you mentioned, you have a PhD in equine veterinary medicine, but you're spending most of your time in the sport of eventing now. What is a typical day for you? Are you training every day?
We train 6 days a week. Typically, I get up at 5:30, and I do some of my own fitness first before I go out, and then I feed the horses at 6:30 and start the day, riding and doing all that. And due late at about 8 o'clock, and I'm in bed by 9 usually. It's pony camp every day.
So what kind of fitness work do you do for yourself then?
I used to do a lot of triathlon and cross-country skiing, and my body can't tolerate a lot of that pounding anymore. So I do a lot of yoga, a lot of stretching, some actually ballet movements and that kind of thing to try to keep flexibility. Right now, it's more about, for me, more about flexibility and conditioning, because it is quite a lot of aerobic exercise doing cross country. People that watch the sport, I don't think, have an understanding of how physically taxing it is for the rider to get around, especially at the upper levels when the courses are longer and the jumps are bigger. And you're expending a lot of energy that way.
What about the cardiovascular aspect of fitness as you get older? As you mentioned, you're closer to 60 now, and that might even be more of a challenge to get that cardiovascular fitness for going cross-country.
Yeah, right now I rely mostly on cycling. So I have a mountain bike. It's a little bit dangerous here where I'm at right now to do road biking on the highway, because there's a lot of logging trucks in the roads here are fairly narrow shoulders. So I stay off the road and just mountain bike on trails and stuff like that. And I find you don't have to do a lot. Even a half an hour a day is plenty to get your conditioning.
Well, as we know, you're based in North Carolina for the winter from January through till May to avoid those Minnesota winters. So lots of spring season ahead of you there in North Carolina. What are your plans for the rest of the spring season, Lisa?
Well, I've got Fred will be doing the 2-star, like I said, on Friday. And then we're going to go to Carolina International. And then the fork. And I'm not quite sure about Jersey Fresh or not. It's hanging out there, perhaps. And then for the two young horses that I have that I'm bringing along, we're going to do some of the Sporting Days in Aiken and Heart of Carolinas and Longleaf back at Southern Pines, that kind of thing. I'm toying with the idea of the 6-year-old moving up from novice to training. We'll see how it goes with him. And it'll be a full couple of months. That's a show almost every weekend, just alternating horses.
So what's on your bucket list now?
My bucket list, I have this really strong desire. I really want to do an advanced. I have never done an advanced. And Fred is the edge of his abilities, and Becky and I have been scheming and trying to come up with a plan for him and me to get that knocked off. There is a new advance that's going to be up in Area 4 up in Minnesota this year, and I am shooting for that, and hopefully we will make it. I'm very excited about having that done.
And looking down the road a little bit, Lisa, if you do, do you envisage how long you might be continuing to event into your 60s?
Well, yeah, I'd like to try to go at least until 62 or 63, at least, you know, competitively, probably not in the upper levels. You know, the young horse that I have, the 6-year-old, he will probably be able to do it. He's very talented. But, you know, at that age, my husband is going to be at retirement age, and I promised him that he does not have to look at horses forever, and that I would donate some time to him as well in the future.
Well, that sounds like a perfect plan, Lisa. Well, congratulations again on the start of the season. Long may that form continue, and you continue to enjoy your eventing.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Kylie Dermody from Area 1 has already been showing form in Ocala, Florida, where she's based for the winter, and we'll also hear how she finds some of her young horses, too, in Ireland. Kylie, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Well, you've got off to a very good start, haven't you, this season down in Florida. We want to talk about that, and we want to talk about how you source your young horses from Ireland, because you have a good Irish connection there. But tell us about the horses that you've got started this season, and you know, a little bit about their background and the form that they've come out with already.
Oh, we have a really exciting bunch of horses now, and they've all been very well started, and they're coming off of good records, and so it was quite nice to walk into that. And the most experienced of the bunch is Da Vinci Code, and he's an 8-year-old that did a 2-star with Ashley, and I'm just sort of getting to know him a bit and getting a partnership going. And then there are 2 that just turned 7, that's Coolie Ice and Loop the Loop. And they both did a few 1-stars last year, and they just moved up to intermediate last weekend at Ocala. And they really came out strong and confident and ready to go. So the 3 of those will hopefully aim for a 2-star this spring if all goes well. But we're sort of just taking it one event at a time and seeing how things go with them. And then I have an 8-year-old of my own by Master Imp that he had done 1 preliminary with me in Ireland before we moved over, and then didn't compete last year because I was pregnant, and he just did his first 2 preliminaries here. So I'll hope to do a 1-star with him this spring, possibly, and just see how things go with him. And then after that, we have 2 6-year-olds. I have one that I own with the Nichols named Harbor Master, and he's one that we bought as a 3-year-old and just taken our time producing him. And he's done his first 3 training levels, and he probably will be ready to move up to the preliminary before too long. And then the other 6-year-old is another horse by Golden Master that has done 3 trainings now as well, and we'll sort of play it by ear with him when he's ready to move up. He might take a little bit more time. He's just a bit careful and super game and just needs to learn his job a bit before we put bigger questions in front of him. And then after that, we have 1 other 8-year-old called OBS Pepperpot, and he's done a 2-star, but he's one that I'm going to spend a little bit of time show jumping and see what he can do there. So we have quite a group of horses at the minute, and a lot of them the Nichols have bought as sort of 3, 4, or 5-year-olds, and a few of them I actually got to start myself, which is fun, and it definitely, I enjoy that part of it all. So, and then last fall we bought 3 3-year-olds in Ireland that are still over there with my husband, just getting backed, and they'll spend a little bit of time there before we bring them over. So we definitely will have a busy summer ahead of us as well.
You will. I want to talk about those horses you're bringing over, but tell us about your arrangement with the Nichols and who they are, and your where you're based with them, obviously in the winter down here in Ocala and also at home in Vermont.
I met them almost 10 years ago now, when I was still in Vermont as a teenager, and they are just wonderful people, and they're in their early 70s and retired, and sort of got back into horses. This was about 10 years ago now, when their granddaughter was getting going with horses, and they started with Connemara ponies, and they've worked their way. They spent a little bit of time with a few Dutch horses that they brought over from VDL in Holland, and then added going back to Ireland. But they really enjoy the horses and seeing them progress and seeing them develop. And, you know, just, I think they have a really good eye, and they're lucky people as well. And they're just super people to work for. And we've gotten along really well, and just enjoy the whole process rather than just the end result. And I think they're unique in that way, that they really give their horses a chance and there's no rush and no pressure on them whatsoever. And they're open to, you know, seeing what each horse wants to do as well. Like, we've had some in the past when I worked for them that we ended up selling one as a jumper. I got to show in a few meter 40 classes in the 7 and 8 year olds, and that was just a complete blast. And we had another horse that didn't really want to event either, and we sold him as a hunter, and he's gone along and had a super career and really been a happy horse. And I think that they're not stuck in going in any one direction or making any horse do something that it doesn't want to do, and at the same time giving them the chances that they need, whether it's time or a break or whatnot. They're patient and really do right by all of their horses, and they're just wonderful people to work for. And we've had a good relationship, and just I enjoy spending time with them, and I feel really lucky to have them. They're more family to me than anything at this point, and I think that it's just a sort of a relationship and a partnership that works, and I think we're all fortunate to have each other.
Well, let's talk about the horses that you're sourcing. You mentioned bringing younger horses over from Ireland, and you were based there for a few years before you relocated back here, and now have your first child, is it Kylie?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. She was just born in early November, so she's but she's been busy already at quite a few events, and well, she knows no else. But a few of the horses, like Cooley Ice, the 7-year-old, he was bought as a 3-year-old in Ireland, and we brought him over. He was bought through Richard Shane, but he was unbroken at the time, so they've known him since the very beginning. And then the 2 6-year-olds, one came through the sales in Gordesbridge as a 3-year-old, that's Bally Murphy Luke. And so he was a horse that actually was left over in Ireland for my husband and I to start. So that's sort of fun to have the ride on him again, to have seen him since he, you know, was in the sales in Gordesbridge jumping loose as a 3-year-old, and now to, you know, get to ride him and be out eventing on him and to see what he is under saddle as well. And then the 6-year-old Harbor Master we bought as a 3-year-old when I first moved over, and Jeff and I sort of went in on him together, and Jeff actually bought him unseen. I have a good friend, Barbara Hatton, in Ireland. She's just down the road from us, and she stood Master Imp and King of Diamonds and her Imperius, and her family obviously has quite the sort of reputation for breeding horses, and she was a great relationship that I was able to form over there. And she sent him to us to evaluate as a 3-year-old. She thought quite a lot of him, and I ended up really falling in love with him and talked Jeff into maybe going in on him with me, so I was able to keep him. But like something like him, he literally came in from the field and had never been caught or had anything done with him, but he had no sort of bad habits, and we knew his history. And I think that's sort of an invaluable way to start, that you're not getting any baggage and there's no question marks in their sort of histories. And I think that's just, it's a great asset to have that and to know where they came from.
And your husband Jeff works with the horses with you, so you can influence these and imprint them at a very early age to get them started before you get on their backs.
Yeah, and to be honest, though, a lot of, like, the way the horses are done there, and I'm sure you understand that in Ireland, there's not a lot of imprinting going on, for better or for worse. So, like, all of our 3-year-olds, a lot of them, and that was quite a culture shock for me going over there. Like, a lot of what my husband, Donica, does is producing 3-year-olds for the sales in Gordesbridge, and that keeps him busy in the fall. But I mean, I don't know how many horses I saw come through there. Very few of them have any handling besides getting caught to maybe have their feet trimmed, and maybe most of them get wormed and whatnot, but that's it. And it's amazing to me, like, I think what their temperaments and personalities are like. I feel like I wonder sometimes, to be honest, how much of a difference it does make, that daily handling, because I think the quiet ones are quiet and the sharp ones are sharp, and it's interesting how much of their personalities you can see and figure out. Like Maddie, for instance, the harbor master horse, I know he had been caught to be wormed, and that was it. He'd never had a halter on him, but you could tell from seeing him out in the field with the three-year-old that Barbara had bred, and out with all of his buddies, and he just had that sweet, easygoing personality and following you around the field and just wanted to be in the middle of everything. And he stayed that way to this day. Like, he has that same easygoing nature, and he was an easy horse to break. And I think for the most part, we could tell a lot by the ones that come in what they're going to be like before you ever touch them. And there's definitely ones I didn't have a lot of interest in, and ones that you'd sort of be attracted to just by the way they are on the ground. And I think sometimes it was easier ones that had sort of no handling rather than bad handling. And definitely with a few of my own, I spent more time with when they came home from the sales, getting them leading and picking up their feet. But it'll be interesting to see how much of a difference it made versus the ones that weren't exactly touched. But so it's definitely a different way of life over there than it is at most of the places here. But I think it works there, and they just get to go out and be horses and live on the land a little bit until they're ready to go to work. And it seems to work. So
what were you looking at then? What were you looking at, Carly, then, when you're looking at a horse that has not been handled much? So you really are looking at the very raw product. What appeals to you?
I think, I mean, for starters, the ones that just have an interest in life, that want to be a part of things and that aren't sharp and silly and, you know, sort of just have that personality that want to be a part of things. And obviously, just, you know, what we have to go on is just seeing them loose and seeing the type and seeing the model. And I definitely got to learn a lot more about the breeding and sort of what stallions I'd be bigger fans of and others that I maybe would steer clear of a little bit. And we all got to have our sort of biases that way a little bit. And I think sometimes that's a good or a bad thing, that there's definitely the horses that prove you wrong that might not look like what you want on paper, but they're great horses. And seeing it work the other way, obviously, as well, that something great on paper isn't nice in person. But I think it's just how quickly they catch on, too, like seeing them come in and jumping loose for the first time and just seeing how they figure out things and how they learn and how quickly they learn. And I think a lot of the times your first opinion is the right one. And I think that is a good lesson to learn, that not trying to sort of learn to like anything, I think, has been something I've sort of come across as well, that a lot of times my first opinion and first impression is the right one. And sometimes you just have to go with that and not try and make something into something that it's not, just because you want it to. And that's a difficult lesson sometimes, but I think that's something I've had to learn.
Well, certainly, yes, there's nothing like those first impressions. Well, you clearly have got a good stream of horses coming along and providing you with horses at all levels, eventually going up to the advanced and to maybe four-star. Would that be your plan with them? Are you very ambitious, Kylie, or do you prefer just producing young horses?
I love the young horses, but I think, I mean, the Nichols and I have had lots of conversations since I've been back of sort of what our plans are and what, you know, sort of direction we all would like to go in if things work out. And I think there's probably a horse or two that we would like to continue on with and sort of see what they can do. So that's definitely a possibility if it works out. And, you know, and they've had a tendency to sell horses once they get to the upper levels in the past. But I think if things work out, we would like to continue on with a horse or two and just see sort of how things go, and definitely keeping something to the advanced or 3 and 4 star level is a possibility now. But like with Trading Aces, that opportunity came out to sell him, and that took pressure off of spending more time with the younger horses. And so it's sort of just play it by ear with how things go, but I think definitely keeping something for the longer road is the plan that we have at the minute.
Right. Well, obviously you've got off to a great start, as I said earlier, with the getting in the rankings there on the leaderboard with the horses that you showed at Rocking Horse and the Ocala Horse Properties two events already this year. So what next for you then, Kylie? What does the season look like in spring and then when you go back to Vermont for the summer?
I think we've sort of just taken our time a little bit to see what they're all ready to do. I mean, these are all new horses for me, but though I had new Coulee Ice and Valley Murphy Luke and the Pepper Pot earlier on, but I hadn't obviously ridden them for 2 years, and so I didn't know how things were going to go. But if things sort of continue on this way, our plan is they'll, their next event, they'll do another Rocking Horse in the intermediate, and then we'll head to Southern Pines and do the two-star there and then see how that goes. And if all goes well there, my plan would be to hopefully have them at Bromont in the two-star if things go well. And if not, we'll just sort of, you know, take things as they come and make a different plan. And but in the back of my mind, Bromont is the big goal with them, and the six-year-old probably will just go back to Vermont and be ready to move up to preliminaries and take our time with them a little bit and give them a chance. And then in the summer, we probably were lucky to have Millbrook not too far away, so that will be something we'll work towards. And GMHA is right in our backyard as well, and they've done an incredible job sort of rebuilding their course and adding the intermediate, so that's something that we'll aim for. And then hopefully have something for Fair Hill again in the fall in the two-star and sort of play that all by ear and see what happens. And the four-year-olds will come over and sort of see how things go with them. My plan for them would be just to play around with them a bit and spend time hacking in Vermont and just giving them a little bit of an education and building them up and letting them take advantage of what we have in Vermont with the hills and conditioning and hacking. And we miss that in Florida. So I think that's our big goal with our time in Vermont, is just making the most of what we have there in terms of land and the facilities and making the most of that conditioning work.
Yes, sounds like an ideal start to their young careers. And you're going to be very busy for the spring and for the summer with that team of horses, Kylie. So I want to thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you very much for having me. It's nice talking to you.
And coming up on this podcast, we're going to be talking about sponsorship. And we'll also have coverage of the Young Event Horse Symposium, which took place in Ocala, Florida this week. Don't forget that this podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store to your smartphone podcast app, so you can listen to the show on the go. Until the next time, thanks for your company and enjoy your eventing.